So welcome to session 11, our next to the last session. So we've gone through 10 sessions, so that's 60 weeks. So that's over a full year if we were meeting every single week. And now we are moving to the theme of knowledge. So this is our last go-round on the theme of knowledge. And of course, space and time and knowledge are all interrelated. And one way you can see that is that what we're reading here is more related, you could say, or is presented in terms of time more than knowledge. But I think we'll see today that how that fits together and how that makes sense. So we're still looking at this general theme, you know, our overall theme for the whole program is how do you activate the vision? How does it really become a part of your life? And I thought that this three-week break that we took, I was following my own advice to keep a journal. And although the journal was not exactly about TSK themes for the most part, I still thought that it was very valuable. And I encourage people to do that. You begin to really understand, especially, I think it actually works better when you're, you know, I found it connected back more readily when in this last week when I've been preparing for the class. So I think that's very valuable, can I say. Okay, we are focusing this week on the witness, and next week we'll be focusing on the witness again. And in the orientation, I said a little bit about how that term, the witness, is used in the earlier parts of Love of Knowledge. And I actually want to go back and go over that again a little bit, because the more I thought about this, the more I got into it, the more I realized that there are some fairly subtle shifts that go on. And in particular, I want to make sure that we're clear that about these shifts, because I think the way that the reading for next week, which comes out of Dynamics, the way it talks about the witness is actually quite different from what we're talking about here. And I want to make sure we understand that. This discussion starts from, well, let me not say it that way. Let's just go back and look at the place where the idea of the witness is introduced in Love of Knowledge is in chapter, I don't have the chapter number in front of me, I think it's chapter 17, but it's on page 142 of Love of Knowledge, and 143 especially. The question is raised, what makes us confident that that we are in touch with something reliable, and that our experience is in some sense reliable, right? And this is a tricky question because in some sense our experience is not reliable. You know, we are caught up in various kinds of interpretation and so on, and we've discussed that many times, so I won't go into it. But there is some sense in which we just say, well, you know, you can trick me, you can fool me, but there is something that I can rely on. And the question is what? And the answer that's presented here is the witness. And the witness is presented here as a feeling. And I think that's really tremendously important. You know, it says, turning from logic and reasoning, I'm reading from page 143, turning from logic and reasoning, we can point to an ever-present witness, the feeling of reality, or the conviction that this is so. And then it gives this example about having a cup on the table, and you see the cup on the table, and then if you close your eyes and imagine the cup on the table, there's a difference between those two experiences, and that difference is the witness. Now that is what you might call the witness at the conventional level. You know, you hit the table, you see the cup, there's a sense of the realness of it all. And of course, it's not just matter, it's not just material. You feel an emotion, and somebody asks you, I'm feeling sad. What are you feeling? And you say, I'm feeling sad. And they say, well, how do you know you're feeling sad? And they just say, well, I know I'm feeling sad. You know, that's the way it is. That's what it feels like. That's the sense of witness. It's a feeling. And that's actually really important, because it's not a matter of what the witness testifies to. You know, we need to stay, or it's helpful to stay, with a kind of sense of what the witness is all about. That is to say, what does the word witness imply? Well, a witness is someone who testifies to what is happening. And so we say the witness, in a courtroom, the witness gets up on the stand, as we say. This is all American courts of law, but I assume it's pretty similar everywhere. The witness gets up on the stand and says what happens. That's the witness's, or what has happened. That's the witness's testimony. So we have a witness, and the witness testifies. But the testimony, which is a description of something that happened in the past, is less important than the fact that there is a witness, right? And that witness is the feeling of something being real. So right now, in this discussion on page 143, the witness is introduced in a kind of an ordinary sense. It's the sense that, yes, the cup is on the table. Yes, I can pound my fist on the table. Yes, I can feel angry. And it all feels very real, right? As opposed to fantasies or daydreams or various other possibilities. And the reason I'm saying that's an ordinary witness is that it doesn't take us anywhere in particular. It's just pointing toward what it is about our ordinary experience that makes us accept the experience as being in some sense real. So that's the initial sense in which we talk about the witness. Now, there's a second move, or there's a further step that you can take, and the reading actually just immediately before the chapter that we're reading for today takes it a little bit further. So on page 189, we're talking about the self and all the different roles the self can play, and at the bottom of page 189, Rinpoche says, the story the witness tells, so the testimony the witness gives, may be just another story. But still there's the witness itself, the powerful assertion that something is, with a direct vitality that cannot be denied. So this focus on vitality is actually very important. The witness testifies, and maybe the witness is bearing false witness, as the expression in English has it. Maybe the witness is lying. Or maybe the witness has misunderstood or misinterpreted or misperceived, as witnesses often do. But there is still the fact of the witness and the aliveness of the witness. And I suppose you could imagine, I'm just thinking of this now, but you could think about a situation where there's a historical event, something that happened, and it's just a story that you've heard, but then you find someone who was actually there, and they tell you about what happened, and the event comes alive in some way, and it's the presence of the witness that creates that aliveness. So that's focus that we get there. And on page 190, Rinpoche goes into that more, and he talks about this idea of the presence of the witness, and he ties it to the dynamic and the vitality of time, right? And he says, perhaps the witness is not just another story. Because you always have that question. You say, well, the witness tells you this is so, but who tells you that the witness is telling the truth? Well, if the witness were only another story, you'd have to look somewhere else to justify that or to substantiate what the witness has to say. But the point here is the witness is perhaps, Mubashe says, perhaps the witness is not just another story. Perhaps the force behind its testimony, which operates entirely apart from the content of what it has to say. So here's this distinction being made. There's what the witness says, the testimony, but there's the presence of the witness. Right? So perhaps the force behind its testimony is a direct expression of the dynamic energy implicit in the flow from past to future and the corresponding vitality of the present. So here we are, we're talking about time, but we're at the same time, we're talking about knowledge. Because there is a knowing. The witness knows in a way that links up to the vitality of time. And that's what is being said here, right? And to read the rest of that paragraph, the witness may point to a primary thrust within time that polar and temporal knowledge do not fully reveal. So we have our ordinary kinds of knowledge, polar knowledge, temporal knowledge, descriptive knowledge. Those are the ways that knowledge gets talked about in Love of Knowledge. Perhaps that sounds familiar. There are our ordinary ways of knowing. But there's this other way of knowing, which is more directly linked into the dynamic energy of time. That's the kind of knowledge that we would like to be able to access. So now we move on, and we actually get to our reading for today. Let's take a look at the very beginning of the reading on page 193. And here we're talking about the witness, right? But we're talking about the witness in a particular setting or situation. So it says, in certain moments we seem more in tune with the underlying energy that makes experience into a coherent whole, more free from the influence of interpretive structures. So we're talking about this underlying energy and dynamic that the witness tunes into. And sometimes, the reading says, we're more tuned into that. We're more connected with it. Energy, awareness, and concentration are united and in balance. A genuine dynamic and power allows us to act in ways that are reliable and effective. We can be sharp, penetrating, one-pointed. We can control the operation of our awareness. These are all good things. Right? And what he says here is, as he starts the next paragraph, in such moments, reality seems most real, and the witness is at its strongest. So this is a witness that is more reliable, you might say, or at least more fully present. It seems to have to do with the dynamic of time. Now, you know, there are times in the TSK books when Rinpoche will describe something and make it sound really good. And you say, oh yeah, that's what I want. And then he'll kind of pull it back. He'll say, oh, but that's wrong. That has some value, but it's not really what we're interested in. But here it seems to me he really is suggesting that this is a way of knowing or a way of being that is valuable, right? Because it's closer to the dynamic of time. A little lower down on the page, he talks about connecting with a deeper time, right? And the idea here is that if there are times when we connect to that deeper time and then our awareness, concentration, and energy are in balance, and all these other things that he's been talking about, it really is valuable. It really is a positive direction to be going in, and it has something to do with activating the vision. At least that's what I'm going to say. It has something to do with activating the vision. If we could do that, right, we would. Now, that holds with respect to the presence, you could say, of the witness. And that's what Rinpoche is talking about here. Now, I want to anticipate a little bit because there's a possibility of confusion, and I'll point this out in the orientation also. There's for next week. There's a possibility of confusion because what happens is, you can say, the witness shows up, the witness is present, and so we know something is really true. That is, we know something is really real, certainly in the sense of something dynamic and alive, right? In this sense of deeper time. But then the witness opens its mouth and starts to speak, and it testifies, right? And there's something that it says. There's the content of what it says. And that is more problematic. So if we look at the beginning of the next paragraph, he says, in such moments, reality seems most real, those moments when we're more in tune with the underlying energy of experience, of reality. In such moments, reality seems most real, and the witness is at its strongest. But what is the content to which the witness testifies? And he gives an answer. He says, normally, the reality of the real, the aliveness of the real, we understand that in terms of a certain story that the witness tells. And that story is about a self that's real and a world that's real. And that's a problem. That's when we fall into our ordinary understanding. So what happens is the witness testifies and we look straight at what the witness has to say. And we're not in tune with the witness. So what do you do? What do you do about that? Well, you need to be able to get clear on what's going on. And the reading for next week uses the same image of the witness, but it focuses more on the telling of the witness. The witness proclaims something to be true. And we need to be ready to challenge that. That's where we're going next week. And there are a couple of possibilities here. One is to look at what the testimony of the witness is and to be ready to raise questions about that. And you know, a lot of TSK is about that. I keep trying to adjust the light a little so that I can be more visible. That seems better. Okay. That's one possibility. Another possibility is to really kind of tune into the sense of the witness as witness. And this is not exactly the way that it's presented in TSK, but some of you may have come across the notion of what's sometimes called the witness consciousness. Right? And that way of talking isn't in TSK, but that way of investigating or inquiry is there in TSK. But when people talk about witness consciousness, it has to do with a kind of a withdrawal. You look at experience. You become a witness to your own experience. And by doing that, you break the connection to kind of the ordinary understanding of what it is that the witness testifies to. Ordinarily, there's a testimony, right? And we accept it as real. The witness says, this is the way it is, and we nod and we say, okay, that's the way it is. And as a result, we really have no options, no choices. We just have one way of seeing things. So the practice of working with witness consciousness is to be able to withdraw. Notice that it's kind of like the bystander, which ought to make you a little bit suspicious, but it's not exactly the same. It's a way of practicing. And it has its value, but it's not, I don't think, what's being talked about here. Here, we're not talking about the testimony of the witness at all. I mean, we will be. That's where we're going in the rest of the chapter. But right now, we're just pointing out that there is the presence of the witness. You know, the witness doesn't have to testify. The witness just shows up. It's a little bit like... Well, maybe an analogy would be if you were going to fight a war and the enemy army showed up, and the army was so powerful, so strong, that you just gave up and surrendered. You know, they don't even have to start fighting. It's kind of like that. The witness is the witness has this connection, especially in these moments, these special moments that Rinpoche is talking about here. The witness has this connection to time and to this deeper time that is also talked about at the beginning of this chapter. So just by being there, the witness is already, in a sense, giving testimony, but it's not a story. Right? There's a phrase in one of the TSK books about knowledge being its own witness. I think in some of the online discussion, I think Eliana referred to that phrase. I couldn't find it when I was looking, but knowledge being its own witness. You know. What we're looking at is this force behind the testimony, the presence of what's real, the vitality. You know. So if we go back and look at the beginning of the chapter again, that first paragraph, there's all these wonderful things. You know, we feel alive, we feel vital. It doesn't exactly say that in this paragraph, but that's kind of the thrust. There's this underlying energy that we're connected with, and we can be sharp and penetrating and one-pointed. And that all has to do with a certain kind of knowing. And that knowing has to do with the vitality of time, and the witness embodies that. But it does not have to do with the testimony of the witness. As soon as the witness opens its mouth to speak, you could say, the possibility arises, or maybe even the likelihood arises, that it's not trustworthy. Right? What the witness has to say is an interpretation, is a story, is an account, is a narrative, and it could be wrong. And in fact, it tends to go wrong from the very beginning. So we're interested in a knowledge which doesn't depend on any of that, has to do with the deeper vitality of time. So if you look at the very bottom of page 193, it raises that point very clearly. It says, perhaps the witness is speaking of something very different. Right? Not the message, not the story that's told. Perhaps the witness is speaking of something very different. Suppose that beneath the time marked out in ordinary experience, there were a deeper time, a fabric into which the patternings presented in conventional time were woven, or else a dynamic whole without distinctions. Right? A time presenting all meanings, but prior to all meanings. That's where I would say the knowledge that we're interested in evoking now in this session, that's where it goes. That's where it comes from, you know, coming and going, or kind of not the right way of talking about it, I suppose. So the point here is not, and this is important, it seems to me, it's really important in terms of what is it about TSK that's special or you know, sets it apart. It's that we're not trying to tell a different story. We're not saying the testimony of the witness is false, and so we need to put in place or bring in a better witness, or you know, cross-examine the witness, to use the image a little more, and determine what the truth is. Those are valuable things to do. But what we're interested in is just the presence of the witness, just the aliveness and vitality, which has, you know, doesn't have anything to do with meanings, as it says right here. It doesn't. It's prior to all meanings. All the meanings show up. Right? That's where we'd like to be able to go, and that I think really is something about TSK. You know, that is different. So sometimes, you know, the question of what is it about TSK that's different. That's a question you can legitimately ask, and that people sometimes ask. This is pointing towards it, I think. Okay, so we lose touch with that presence. So it's not as though, you know, I feel like the image may be a little bit misleading. It's not as though there's some witness that's sort of standing over on the side, and we say, well, if only we could make contact with that witness in a way that didn't depend on the testimony of the witness, but just the presence of the witness. That's kind of the image I was using about this incredibly powerful army. If we could do that, then we'd be then we really would have contacted something more real. That's not exactly right. The point is that what we experience, the aliveness of what we experience, is its own witness. Right? And so the knowledge that we're interested in is the knowledge in which being is its own witness. What there is doesn't require a story to make sense out of it, doesn't require an interpretation. The act of witnessing is an ongoing act in which we just connect with being more directly. Okay? So that's what we don't have. That's why we experience this sense of being lost, or being anxious, or being afraid, or being agitated. All of those things relate to the sense that we're at the level of what the witness has to say, and we're not at the level of just the very presence of the dynamic of time witnessing itself. So we're looking in the wrong place for knowledge. We're using the wrong kind of knowledge. It's a knowledge that's built up from the witness's testimony without really being able to connect to the witness itself. So that's the kind of fundamental distinction that's being made here. And as I say, in the reading for next week, we kind of turn, it's not that we turn away from that, but we're looking in a different part of the whole story. And in fact, the rest of the chapter, I think, is of this chapter that we're reading for today, is also turning away from that and starting to analyze that, is turning away from this deeper connection to time where what is its own witness, what is has its own knowledge. Turning away from that to see, well, how do we, what's the problem? Why aren't we in touch with that? It's doing that kind of analysis. So that's always one aspect of the TSK vision, trying to show how that makes up our you know, how we make up our ordinary reality. Okay. So I want to get us to the point where we can practice with this a little bit. The question then is, we're not yet really looking at what the problematic is. You know, the basic idea is we focus in on the testimony and not on the witness. That's the way I've been talking about it in terms of the way this is described in these passages from TSK. How could we do it differently? Right? How could we connect more directly to the energy of time and the openness of being? So I think there are several answers, and there are answers that you know, we know not only from TSK but from different kinds of meditative traditions and so on. You know, if you engage more immediately the experience that, you know, your own experience, if you focus more on the senses, if you relax the senses, that puts you more in touch with the immediate aliveness of experience. I think TSK shares that with other, you know, with meditative traditions, let's say. One problem with doing that is that you're always, you know, you always then turn it into a possession of the self, because you still accept the testimony of the witness at a more fundamental level. And the witness testifies to the substance of the world and the existence of the self. That's what is said here. Right? So Nonetheless, that's one way to do it, is to relax the senses, to open to experience. Another way to do it is through caring, through your connection with others, or appreciation. These, you know, there's a lot of kind of positive feelings that you can talk about. Appreciation, love, caring, commitment. They all kind of penetrate the storytelling aspect, the witnessing aspect, you know, the telling the way things are that comes up in witnessing. Or, you know, there's cultivating an appreciation for beauty, or sometimes just being overwhelmed by beauty, or just some experience where something is new, you know, the newness of something is, it's like it doesn't, the story of what it is that you encounter when you encounter something new doesn't take you to the newness of it. The newness of it is more like the dynamic and the aliveness of time. So there are all these different ways of connecting to experience more directly, to connecting to an experience that doesn't depend on this story that it's all about the self, you know, me and my experience. So I think, you know, I've been talking a long time, and we're just starting up now, and so it's understandable nobody's really had much of anything to say in the chat box or otherwise, but I'd like to get us back a little bit more in touch with experience. So let's practice with this. And this is a practice you can do in any number of ways. What we're trying to do in doing the practice now for a few minutes is to get more clear, to remind ourselves of the distinction between the knowledge that depends on the story that the witness testifies to, that's one side, as compared to the knowledge that comes in what we could call direct experience. We might say direct experience is not such a good description, but I'm using a shorthand now, and I think people understand what I'm saying. So the practice will be, let's just touch the dynamic, the aliveness, the vitality, in that sense, the realness of the real. And I think it would be helpful to do this in a way that kind of simplifies. So let's just do a practice that everybody knows, which is, we'll just do it for about 4 or 5 minutes, which is the marriage of sound and breath. Right? So be aware of your breathing. Be aware of the sounds that are going on, and if you can, bring them together. In 5 minutes, you know, maybe we won't get too far into it, but I think it is plenty of time to give us a little bit of a sense of what it means not to rely on the story, not so much to rely on the story of me and my experience, me and the world that I'm in. So let's do that practice for just 5 minutes, the marriage of sound and breath. Okay. So let's come back together. And I'll give you a chance to say something about that experience. It's a practice that I'm sure everybody has done. So, you know, doing it for a few minutes now may or may not be interesting. But the reason we were doing it now was to try to get more clear, I think, on this distinction between, you know, what's said about a situation, what the witness testifies to, and of course the witness doesn't have to testify in words. But there's this kind of underlying naming that's going on. So to get clear about the difference between that on the one hand and a kind of stillness, which is...
It's like the presence of knowing.
The presence of knowing, that's a nice way to put it. I think the word presence is really important. The word knowing is really important. There is a distinction between knowing and knowledge. You know, our ordinary understanding... Excuse me?
What was... There's a distinction between knowing and known.
And known, that's right. Well, anything...
Known is the content.
Right. So that really is the point. You know, if we go back to page 193 again... there's this kind of move, the dividing line comes in the first two sentences of the second paragraph. He's saying there's this time when we feel the most together or in balance or alive. I want to use the word alive, although he doesn't say it. There are these times when we feel the most alive and the witness is strong. And that has to do with presence, when we feel most present, you could also say. And he says, in those moments, the witness is at its strongest, and then comes the next sentence, but what is the content to which the witness testifies? And the moment we ask that question, you know, it's like, you know, here's the witness, and the presence of the witness, and the presence, you know, is completely integrated with the presence of what's present to us, of our experience. And then we say, oh, wait a second, what's that? You know, speak up, I can't hear you, witness. And then the witness starts to tell us what's going on. And now we've got a problem. And in particular, the ordinary problem, the usual problem, is that it's what the witness tells us about is all about the self. Right? So Eliana writes, to be more connected with the energy of time, it's important to be more receptive and less assertive, like in the subject-object reversal, or in other words, to be more connected with the surroundings. It's important also to maintain interest in what's going on, and the marriage of sound and breath helps this happen, while at the same time keeps the energy moving. Yeah, one reason that I think most people like the marriage of sound and breath exercise a lot. I think one reason it's very helpful for us is that it's bringing together what we usually keep apart. You know, it's challenging in a very gentle way the distance between the one who's in here breathing, let's say, and the sounds that bring in the world outside. It sort of everything is going on at once, and it keeps the energy moving, as you say. So I think that's good. Klaus says, witnessing breath and sounds, space and time, there is no time for testimony. Yeah, that's a nice way of putting it, of course. The time in which the witness would testify, in which the story would get told, is a different time. It's the time that goes from past to present to future. And David says, a very open feeling, a mood of well-being, no investment in mental activity, relaxed, a foundational feel. Yeah. And Ileana adds something else. I'd like to add that with this condition, knowledge itself becomes available. There's no need for the witness. Right. I think that's right. Knowledge is its own witness, is one way of saying that. Being is its own being. Knowledge is not separate from being. You know, we don't need somebody to come in and say, well, let me tell you how it is, which is what the witness does. Right? Now, if you were talking in terms of witness consciousness and the way that's used in some traditions, that's used in some by some teachers in the Hindu tradition, I won't try to say what that's about. You can read about it a little bit if you like on the web or elsewhere. It's not what we're talking about here. I'll just leave it at that. Again. Michael says, something I hadn't previously experienced in this practice occurred. Instead of trying to push aside the labels and remembered associations and cling, I think, to sounds, I found myself inviting the memories into the moment. So, right, this is one of the questions that comes up in this practice or any practice like this where you say, here's something to focus on, sound and breath. Well, what about all the other stuff that's going through your mind? Do you push it away? Or you're saying, no, you invited it in, right? Hearing a lawnmower, instead of rejecting this thought, of course it's a sound, right? But instead of rejecting this thought, I guess identifying it as a lawnmower, I invited in the childhood memories of summer and summer sounds. This felt like a path to enriching experience beyond the cursory replacement of labels for an arising experience. Yeah, that's good. I think that's good to explore that and to continue to explore that. You know, it's not as though somebody's muttering, you know, somebody's speaking softly in the background and that's the witness and we say, oh, shut up already, I don't need you. You know, there's no time for that. You don't have to do it that way. You can, you know, that is part of what you're experiencing, maybe even the sound of that voice. But the focus is elsewhere. The focus is on this deeper time. And remember that Marriage of Sound and Breath is a time practice in the first TSK book. So we're talking about a deeper time, but with that deeper time, or with the connection to that deeper time, comes a deeper knowledge. Okay, well, let's look for just a little bit at the rest of the chapter. We've actually, of course, only dealt with the first page. It's a short chapter, fortunately. But what happens, what the reading tells us, is that the story, the content of the testimony of the witness, is the self and its world. And so we look at the self. But what the reading really wants to investigate here in the section starts on page 194, called The Self as Subject. And I suppose I should point to what's right above that, where the text says, there may be a different way to bear witness. Right? If we could move into this deeper time, there'd be a different way to bear witness. That's what we've been talking about. But now, Rinpoche analyzes what goes on. We have this story of the self and the world. And so, what do we do with that? Right? We the self is distanced, the self is separate, right? And it gives us a particular way of knowing which depends on that distance. It depends on the knower and the known, the subject and the object. And we have no option besides that. We have no other way to know. And the point that the reading makes here, and I'm just going to go into it briefly because we're pretty much out of time. The point that the reading makes here is if that's our way of knowing, we can't really ever know the self. The only way we could know it is when we see the object, we see ourselves reflected in the way that we know the object. So it's this very indirect way of knowing the self. there is another way of talking about that which I think is helpful, and that is that maybe we could, you know, maybe we can say, well, I know myself. I know my history, right? I know what I'm feeling at this moment. All these things. Isn't that knowing the self? And I think the answer to that is that we are not, in that way of knowing, there's something that's left unknown. What we know is what you might call the objective self, right? So let's say you say, I'm feeling angry. I know that I'm feeling angry. Well, what happens is there is a knower, and then there's a known, and that known is the self that's feeling angry. But you haven't touched the knower. Right? We don't really connect to our own being. So this deeper knowing of time also gives the opportunity of a deeper knowing of being. And of course, you know, you could make that a little bit more complicated and say, if we know being more directly, maybe that's not the self that we know, right? Maybe the whole notion of self falls away. That may well be true, but right now our focus is just that whatever we think we know, including whatever we think we know about ourselves, is does not yet reach this deeper time, this deeper way of knowing, this knowing which is its own witness, this knowing which is inherent in being. Right? So, excuse me?
Self is content,
exactly. Right. The self is you know, we know the self is the content of our thoughts, because, you know, we kind of focus on ourselves, and we think we've known the self. Well, we've known the objective self. That's not a term in TSK as far as I can remember, but it kind of seems helpful to me right now to talk about it that way. And then we say, well, the self is the one who owns the experience, and we say all these different ways, we say all these things about the self, right? We try to point back, but what we don't ever get to is, you know, this witness that is being, that is not anything other than being. And maybe just very quickly, let's look at page at 197. At the bottom of the page, or maybe at the top of the page first, he comes back to the idea of witness, and he says, even if the self's self-interpretation, okay, proves to be incoherent, we don't need to go into that, there's something or someone that continues to occupy the center of experienced reality. And then if we look for that center, we have no way of finding it. That's what we've been looking at. And then at the bottom of the page, he says, perhaps we've misunderstood the knowledge to which the witness testifies. For the witness can only be witness if it's more than another story. And so we're looking at that more than. And that's, in a sense, the same as looking at the deeper time. And it's the same as looking at a knowing that has nothing to do with knower and known, or with what the self knows. That's what we're looking at. That's what we're wanting to explore. So next week we will really be focusing still on some of the obstacles that come up when we try to do that, some of our misunderstandings. But of course, whenever we look at the obstacles, we also have the possibility of knowing at this deeper level. So that's what we're going to be exploring. I see one more comment from Michael. I'll let him have the last word. Objective self as content, is that the bystander self knowing the outsider self? Well, yeah, I think that's probably right. My first reaction is yes. I have to think about it a little bit. Okay. Thank you very much, everybody. We will meet again next week.